lifetimes of listening.
I made it to the top man in the state of Arizona after just playing for a year.
That music sort of solidified that period of time in my life.
No matter how long we've been apart, no matter where we are in life, we are connected by that song.
Lifetimes of listening.
Welcome to Lifetimes of Listening, a podcast that seeks to understand why music is important in people's lives. Today's topic is music during the pandemic. And for many of us, music was a source of sustenance, of comfort, strength in the face of a three-year COVID-19 pandemic. As we were confined in our homes with limited face-to-face contact with others, music played a special and very important role for millions of people, and that's what we're going to explore today in today's episode of Lifetimes of Listening. So Dan, is there any music of special significance for you during the pandemic?
Yeah, there are actually several things. I was thinking about this morning. There are three things I want to mention. One is an occasion to, it's very memorable, to go to a concert of a local choral group, True Concord, which I'm sure you're familiar with. And because of what was going on with the pandemic, they had the concert, but they had it outdoors on a huge patio with all the singers in front of us, and there are probably a dozen, at least 5 or 6 feet apart from one another, and us in the audience, and there were maybe 50 or 75. But again, sitting on this enormous patio, and every chair was at least 6 feet from every other chair. So this very unique kind of concert performance experience. Another one, and I'll get through these quickly. Another one is that one of my favorite jazz pianists, Emmett Cohen, who's in New York City, started early in the pandemic a thing called Monday at Emmett's, where he just performs in his little apartment in New York City. He on piano, his drummer, his bass player, and a guest artist. And this started during the pandemic, and it became a national phenomenon that this young pianist got this thing going. And we listened to it. We probably watched it 30 or 40 times in the course of this. But the one other thing about the pandemic musically that I can really look to is that I kind of got through the pandemic thanks to Bill Withers, okay? There was a period of a year or year and a half where I swear every single morning I would get up, go downstairs, and the first thing I do after pouring a cup of coffee was listen to Bill Withers singing Lovely Day, if you know the song.
Oh, yeah.
Something about that song got me like, okay, it's going to be a lovely day. The world is wacky, but this song will help me get off to a good start.
And now I really want to go listen to the song minute.
It became part of my daily routine, again, for like a year, year and a half, every day the same song. So those are some parts of my experience about music during this whole episode.
I unpacked a lot of my feelings about this in the TEDx talk that I did, and one of the interviews that I used in the TEDx talk about music and music making us better people, I also were going to listen to in this episode. But I had discovered there was in 2020, REM released a live album, a live concert album from 1989, I think it was, maybe 1990, right around then. And this is at a time where back then I went to several REM concerts. I'd seen them multiple times in those years, the end of the 80s, early 90s. And I listened to, according to Spotify, I was one of the people that listened to that album the most in the year 2020 than of all the people. I'm just again and again and again. It was this wonderful live album that was released limited number on vinyl, and I snapped up a copy and like listening to that as a live album, giving myself the treat of listening to that live album is solace. I mean, I intentionally, when I sit down to listen to that album, I'm intentionally doing a kindness for myself.
I feel the same way about some of my favorite music, that if things are challenging, whether it's pandemic stuff during that time or whatever, like, okay, I'm going to reward myself this afternoon by just sitting in my office and with my really good speakers attached to my computer, listen to whatever. And I've got half a dozen things that do that for me. So this is a really wonderful topic for us, Brian, and we're going to be exploring this idea of music and the COVID pandemic. Our guest today on this episode of Lifetimes of Listening is going to be Professor Leah Falco. She's a professor of disability and psychoeducational studies here at the University of Arizona. We'll talk with her in just a moment here on Lifetimes of Listening, so stay with us.
This episode of Lifetimes of Listening is about music and the COVID pandemic, and we have a guest who we believe can meaningfully reflect on this topic, Dr. Leah Falco, Associate Professor of Educational Psychology at the University of Arizona. Professor Falco is a certified school counselor in the state of Arizona and worked as a middle school counselor in the Amphitheater School District prior to completing her doctorate. Her expertise is in the area of career development, with research that explores how adolescents view themselves as future workers and how career issues are related to aspects of motivation and identity. Dr. Falco is a member of the American Counseling Association and National Career Development Association, and she works in a school-based mental health running Tucson Unified School District's Talk It Out program, set up just before the pandemic and utilizing a clinical training model to provide free mental health counseling to students and families year-round. Professor Falco, welcome to Lifetimes of Listening. And may we call you Leah?
Is that sure thing.
The casual
yes,
okay?
Please call me right. Leah, and thank you so much for having me.
So I am so impressed by the concept of the Talk It Out program and the idea of the Talk It Out program, but I'm also aware you did most of this work in 2018, 2019 and launched it just before COVID hit. Can you tell us a little bit about the program and what that was like?
Sure, happy to. So school-based mental health is a passion of mine because I really feel it's incredibly important to provide accessible mental health supports for students in schools. So that was the idea that led to the genesis of the program. And like you mentioned, it coincidentally happened that we launched the pilot part of the program right on the cusp of the beginning of the pandemic. So like so many things in recent years, COVID collided with that experience for me and for the students and families involved all around that same time. So as we were implementing the program and doing our best to provide these amazing mental health counseling services for students, they were experiencing school shutdowns and online learning and everything that happened for them during the pandemic.
So the timing was actually good in a way. I think. I mean, you were setting up a program that had some utility given the circumstances that were happening in the wider environment.
Yeah, and COVID really shined a light on all the mental health challenges that students and families and teachers and school systems were experiencing already, and really amplified those. So the timing was good. It was still really challenging. And I to this day, spend a lot of time thinking about the emotional impact on students.
Was music a part of either something that you encountered a lot in the Talk It Out program or something that you personally used at the pandemic? Was how did your listening change, and are you aware of anything reported through Talk It Out?
Yeah, both actually. In reflecting on all of this, as I was getting ready for the show today, I mentioned earlier that I'm also a mom, and I have two kids who are school aged, and so this affected me personally, the pandemic and school closures and our mental health, as well as professionally in doing this work, and in thinking about it, I don't know how much I was aware at the time, but we did rely on music a lot to help us feel better, to feel happier, to feel connected. And that is certainly the case for students that we work with in schools. So certainly through the normal course of development, music plays a huge role in our lives in thinking about who we are and
who we connect with, who our friends are, and our identities, what we enjoy, and that collective experience.
But if one is experiencing a challenging situation like the COVID pandemic was for just about everybody, and there's emotion involved with that, music, we have found in talking to people and my own personal experience, music is a way of connecting with and processing emotions. Yes. in many, many important ways. I mean, I can share, you know, that experience has been mine many, many times, that I'll have something on my plate that is challenging or emotionally difficult or a long-term issue, and somehow connecting with music kind of helps that. Can you, as one with a psychological and counseling background, can you understand or explain that in any way?
Yeah, I think it has to do with the way our brain processes stress and the coping mechanisms that we rely on consciously or unconsciously to cope with stress. So we know that music is... I'm not a cognitive psychologist, but I can say with a certain degree of confidence that there are neurological pathways in our brain that are activated when we listen to music, especially with the association with experience and emotion. So wherever we are located in time, the music that resonates with us at any given moment can activate those emotions, whether they're happiness, whether they're sadness, you know, the range. I don't like to say negative or positive emotions because we don't want to valence emotions, but the full range of human experience can be experienced through that connection to music.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
So is there something that you're aware of that students, so you and I both teach here at the U of A, we're dealing with students that spend either middle school or high school in part in COVID and in the lockdown. And our older non-traditional students also had their own challenges. What are the remnants of that for students today? What are we still seeing? What are the effects of the pandemic on this generation?
I think there's a universal agreement, or at least widespread general agreement among educators and mental health professionals, that the COVID experience, regardless of how old you were when COVID was in its intense phase, really had a profound effect on the way we organize social relationships. And for kids in school, developmentally, that has had lasting consequences, the way that we form friendships, the way that we interact with others, even our ability to share physical space with others was radically shifted during that time and maybe permanently. And then in terms of sort of the emotional developmental piece, we saw and continue to see just a really drastic increase in mood challenges. So kids and adults both experiencing much higher, much more intense rates of anxiety, depression, worry about the future, and those kinds of things. And those are really lasting effects that we, I think, collectively still grapple with.
Well, it's great to have you with us today. In preparation for this episode and earlier, Brian and I have shared on a couple of occasions our own experiences with music during the pandemic, and that's the focus of this episode. So in a couple of minutes, we're going to share with you, Professor Falco, several moving musical memories that came out of conversations we had with some U of A students about the role of music for them during the pandemic, and then we'll ask you to just respond to those in whatever way you can. So that's coming up shortly. Stay with us here on Lifetimes of Listening.
Welcome back. So now we have three musical memories about music in the pandemic to share with our guest, Leah Falco. The first is from a student of mine from a couple of years ago. All three of these interviews were recorded in the fall of 2022 for context. And the first is a student named Andre Cota. He'll introduce himself in just a moment. So this is Andre Cota.
My name is Andre Cota. I'm a music ed major with a jazz emphasis here at the University of Arizona.
been playing saxophone for the majority of my life since fourth grade. My high school had this indoor percussion ensemble, and it was both marching groups, and I loved it. Though the marching band was kind of bad, it was still an enjoyable experience because I got to hang out with my friends. It was just an overall good time. And then in indoor, we were good. We were like top in the state. We always got first. And then my sophomore year, we were literally the best. We got in the 80s our first competition, which is unheard of. And we were on track to make it to Dayton, which is champs, or world champs. But then COVID hit. So that kind of put a damper on everything. And then that program started going downhill. But right now it's kind of in its building blocks, trying to get back to the way it was. I guess how I got into jazz was freshman year there was two people that I kind of looked up to, and they were in the Tucson Jazz Institute, some of the best players I knew, and they were just there at my high school. I wanted to be like that, but obviously jazz is a whole other boatload of knowledge it's a big, very big iceberg, to say the least. So to say that I could have learned it all on my own that year, or even over the course of high school, wasn't capable. But then, obviously, COVID hit. And then August of 2020, I started taking lessons online. I reached out to one of my friends, his name was Joel, my freshman year. He was one of the ones I looked up to. And I asked him if I could have the information of his teacher, Niamh and Lyles, for lessons. And he's like, yeah, sure. So he gave me it. And then I started taking lessons with Niamh. And from basically August 2020 until August 2022, when I came here at the U of A, over the span of that first year from 2020 to 2021, I was just lesson upon lesson with Niamh. And every week, every other week, I was just practicing. That was all I did. And then that December of 2021, Niamh wanted me to go for Allstate, just because why not? And obviously telling myself, I've only been doing this for a year, can't do it. But I'm like, screw it, I'm going to do it. And next thing I knew, I made it in. I made it past the first round, which that was big for me. And then second round came, I'm like, all right, this is where I'm going to get kicked out. But no, I was second alto, but I made it into the top man. So I like to give myself that credit of being the second best alto player in the state of Arizona after just playing for a year.
What a great story.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so a couple of things come up for me, and I'm hearing him describe his experience in marching band prior to the pandemic, and the way that being a musician and being able to participate in that activity with others served several purposes for him. It's an in-group, so it gives him a sense of belonging and identity and passion and purpose and achievement. And all of those things are so healthy for young people, for all people. And then COVID disrupted that in a major way. And he's reflecting on the experience of really having to reorganize the way that music fit into his life, reemerging from the pandemic, and thinking about, in a more real sense, rediscovering that passion and that purpose in a different way.
A new genre, a new teacher.
Uh-huh.
And the teacher he mentioned, Niamh and Lyles, happens to be a fellow I've performed with, in fact, did in a couple of their jazz bands here at the university some years ago. And Niamh is a wonderful instrumentalist, and I just also know him to be a very inspiring person on a kind of a spiritual, emotional, social level. So I can imagine there was a good fit for the two of them. Yeah.
I remember distinctly that moment, you know, March of 2020. Well, so I've mentioned elsewhere in this podcast that on March 1st, 2020, my dad died. I was in a very different emotional place. We, with this project, we're supposed to go to South by Southwest to launch it. In March of 2020, so a lot of things were disrupted then. But I do remember realizing that we were in for a long haul, and I remember thinking, oh, this is a time to better myself. Mm. Mm-hmm. And it sounds, his story feels to me like a story of, oh, I did that. You know, like, uh-huh. I'm going to become, well, I've been wanting to be a better jazz player for a while. And jazz really is a steep mountain with, you know, a lot of, no jazz artist doesn't have a, well, for 5 years, I practiced 8 hours a day, so I can become mediocre. Right. Like that's the basic story of becoming a jazz musician.
The pandemic could have been an excuse for a young man like this to say, okay, it's too much, I'll just take a little break. Instead, he used the opportunity to move ahead in some new ways that were very good for him personally. And here he's in a real different place with music a few years later, which is pretty cool.
That struck me, and that because it resonated so much with that feeling of optimism I had. You know, I was trying to cling to in the spring of 2020, and also. The sadness at all of the institutions that were crippled, like his school, you know, like this school is one of the best in the country for wind ensemble music. And now it's floundering, you know?
Yeah. I think that time was profound for all of us in so many ways, in that sudden stoppage that we experienced creates a sense of loss and opportunity and a confusing sense of control, because there are things that are happening around you that are out of your control. And the way that you move forward through that could be passive. It could be, you know, I am losing this moment and I'm sad and there's nothing I can do about it. Or it can be a chance to really reclaim your autonomy and decide to chart a new path. And it sounds like Andre did that.
Yeah, great. So we have another musical memory to share with you. Again, an interview, conversation we had with a U of A student in the fall of 22. And Ariel Henrich really conveys and opens up in a very personal and vulnerable way about the role that music played in her life during the pandemic. So let's listen to Ariel's story now.
My name is Ariel Henrich, and I'm a first-year student at the U of A. And I'm initially from Chandler, Arizona, so I moved down here, 2 hours down. But I'm also half Taiwanese, so I was originally born in Taiwan and moved to the U.S. when I was 3. The way I tend to listen to music is I'll just listen to about 2 or 3 songs continuously, nonstop, for like a month, and then get tired of them, throw them out, and then listen to a set of like 3 new ones. 2021 fall, it was after the COVID pandemic when things were starting to open up again. And during the COVID pandemic, I went through like just really bad mental health. Pretty much as soon as the pandemic started, I had OCD, and then I had anxiety and depression, and then an eating disorder, and then those sort of like cleared up pretty miraculously, like right around 2021 October. And during that time, I found this album called Plantasia, and it was, I think it was written in 1970, and it was written when music had first started becoming synthesized. So instead of having orchestrals, it was mostly like a theremin Moog situation. And it was written, the concept of the album was music written for humans, but also plants. So you could like play the music to your plants. It was called Plantasia. And I listened to it, and it was so innocently nice. And it didn't have any pain associated with it. It was just very like innocent, play it for your plants type of deal. And it was 40 minutes, and I listened to it all the time when I was studying. And then I also, during that time, listened to The Japanese Suite by Gustav Holst. I listened to those two continuously, and it was like probably one of the best moments of my life. So I think if I hadn't had those pieces of music, I would have still had the same experience, but that music sort of solidified that period of time in my life, in my head. So what sort of brought me out of all the nasties of 2020 and 2021, the beginning of it, was like focusing more on the present moment than the past or the future. So I think I listened to those pieces of music to remind me of the way I can get back to the present and not focus on the past or the future.
I love this for her. I'm so happy that she recognizes all of, and her awareness, right? The way she speaks about her awareness of the experience she had with her emotions during that time. And it connects directly to what we were talking about earlier when I mentioned that so many people experienced heightened anxiety and depression. And I can relate to listening to the same song or few songs over and over again in a really obsessive way.
Me too.
I think that's that's such a fun way to connect with music, but it allows you to connect in a really intense way, right? And explore like every lyric, if it's a pop song, or the contours of the arrangement in ways that do become a little bit obsessive. And to recognize that, and then to maybe find a different style of music or a different way of connecting to music that creates maybe a more neutral space for you to be in your head and in your body and in your mind.
You know, I had that experience, and just hearing you reflect on that now, it may have been, and it occurred during the pandemic. It's been about, it was about 2 years ago that I discovered a new band. I happened to turn on the radio. A song was on by a band I had never heard before. The song has been an obsession of mine for 2 years. And I'm wondering if there was something about where I was in my head and in my heart 2 years ago that this particular piece of music happened to show up in the midst of all that. And it's the most persistent, what is called earworm, most persistent earworm I've ever had in my life. It's now 2 years later. It won't go away. It's not all the time anymore.
Well, now you have to tell us the song. What's the...
This is this band I told you about, a group out of Boston called Lake Street Dive.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Do you know Lake Street
Dive? Yes.
Okay, the song Hypotheticals?
Yes, wonderful.
I just can't tell you. This song swept into my life, completely took me over for a couple of months, and it's still there. And that's, it may have been because of what we had all been through together and my special relationship to music during that time.
I think songs and music have such prominence in our episodic memory, like you're describing, that whatever is salient for us at any given moment in time, if it collides with or intersects with a song that really resonates, it electrifies us in ways that, you know, it might not otherwise if you were to hear it at a different point in time, or if you have a different association with that particular song.
And I think the song electrified me, as you say, and that's a great term. Lyrically and also musically, because there's something about this particular band that takes me kind of back to the mid-60s.
Yes, the sonic.
Yeah, there's a thing they do that obviously have listened to a lot of music from the 60s. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And you're one of the few people I know who knows about Lake Street Dive. They're just an amazing.
Right. So this next time your kids are questioning your taste, it resonates. I am always amazed at what music we do cling to when we find ourselves needing to cling to music, and you know that there is a sort of cosmic sense that the music comes into our lives in these various ways, and it sometimes it's just the perfect thing, and occasionally you bump into somebody else who's had that same connection to the music, but often not. You know, often it's sort of like, oh, that, you know, that's. So, my pandemic, that's one of the things that I talked about in the TED Talk. I mean, my pandemic listening was all over the map, and it was very, you know, like I'm a music teacher. I had expectations for what my music listening and experience was supposed to be, but what it was something else and entirely. And I kept finding myself going back for different kinds of things and using music music was very utilitarian. It was very useful for me for very specific moods. But I am not, unlike both of you, it sounds like, and Ariel, I am not a person that likes to listen on repeat. There are albums, very, you know, like 30-song albums that I'll listen to again and again and again and come back to. But once or twice, and then I gotta give it some time again.
So, Leah, we have one more really interesting musical memory about music and the pandemic that we're going to share with you in just a moment. That's coming up next on Lifetimes of Listening.
Welcome back. So, our last story is by another student, Hunter Del Rosario, who told me the story, and it just landed. It was such an impactful moment for him that I'm very grateful to share it with you, and I'll be curious for your take on it.
I'm Hunter. I'm a sophomore. I'm a business major here. I did choir for 8 years. I was in men's ensemble, so it was all male voices at the time, and it was a brotherhood. You were all on, you were really close to one another. You were brothers. You were more than just some guys singing together. It wasn't about the music you made. It wasn't about how you sounded together. It was how you felt in that moment doing what you all share collective interest in. There's a certain piece, Shenandoah. At the end of the year, we have a candlelight concert. It's our most intimate concert and our only one performed inside our rehearsal room, kind of like the one that we're in right now. So we'll turn all the lights off. We'll string like Christmas lights and have like candles all around the room. And it's a very dark and intimate setting compared to our other concerts in our performance area. And at the very end, we sing the song Shenandoah. And it represents that no matter how long we've been apart, no matter where we are in life, we are connected by that song. Alumni of our high school will come back to watch Candlelight, and they're invited back up to sing with the current members. And I think I've gone back twice now. So I think 2 years ago, we had the pandemic, so it was kind of iffy going back, and we didn't do it in the choir room, we did it outside. That's one that was memorable in the sense it was one of our first in-person performances, was our last. So it was just like, whoa. That was the whole thing, is we also just couldn't do it inside. We had to do it outdoors. Our junior year, it was canceled because pandemic. That's about the time I was in high school. So yeah, that March, and then everything after was closed. So I think it was around May. Yeah, around like March, we get the okay, you can come back on campus, but everything's very limited. You had A and like cohort A and B, all this stuff. So you'd only have half of the choir come one day, half of the other choir come the other day. And because we're performing arts, you can't really sing with a mask on. It's difficult, like how a lot of the bands had to play with the filters on the bells, or they just couldn't play at all. One thing that our director pushed really heavily for, and he wanted at least one last performance, because we were also his graduating class. He was new when we were freshmen. So us as freshmen grew with our current director. So it was just very sentimental and meaningful to him to see how much we've all grown together, and not only as a group, but individually, and the way he's seen all of us interact. He wanted us to be able to perform together for the first time and the last time.
It's another story that I love, and it feels sad in a lot of ways. I'm just feeling a sense of loss and regret. And I don't know if that's just me projecting onto the story, but I hear a student whose experience in choir was such a chance for community, and the experience of creating something in community was so profound and intimate. For the student, he even uses those words. Mm-hmm. And the pandemic disrupted musicians and singers in ways that were pretty unique, the way he describes, singing as something that suddenly becomes dangerous. Mm-hmm. And playing an instrument suddenly becomes something that becomes dangerous. And that stands in such stark contrast to the way that most of us typically think of singing and playing instruments. And then him thinking about what it was like to try and reclaim some of that and how that felt sentimental and really important, probably in ways that he might not have prior to any of that happening.
Yeah, his description, too, of the lights being down, and the words that he used, the intimacy of the performance, how much of an impact that had on the singers and the people who were in attendance.
Yeah, you can really imagine being in the audience, but you can also imagine being in the choir.
Yeah,
right.
And how special that must have felt.
The idea that you're so connected to these people in your choir and you're doing this thing that you love, and it's connected to the past and to the future in a way that you can tangibly see in this mm-hmm. one experience and the one song at the end of the year. And then to have that be his last moment, his first time to sing as a choir chorister for a year and a half, mm-hmm. and it also to be his last time,
yeah.
And the ways that that affects his experience of it, it's just fun. When he told me that story, and it was just one of those like...
Yeah, I think Brian and I... often feel very privileged to sit and talk with people about these things. What somebody observed in the course of this project very early on, that if you approach somebody on the street, a complete stranger, and said, "Would you tell me some really interesting, deeply personal story about your life?" they'd say, "Of course not." But if you said to the same person, "Would you tell me about a moment in your life when music was especially important?" what they have to share may well be, as it was for this young man, a deeply personal, revelatory experience. And that's why I think Brian and I, that's the thrill that we get out of doing this project.
Started.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just that awareness of that. But so do you have anything that we've brought up that you'd like to share to sort of bring to a close your wisdom about dealing with the disruption of the pandemic? And
no wisdom at all. But to your point, I was trying to imagine where I could fit into this conversation, not being somebody who has any expertise in music and emotion or even the COVID pandemic. But I really realized that music is transcendent. And Dan, when you said... about asking a stranger on the street to share their experience with music, I was like, oh, I can do that. I can think about my own experience with music. I can think about how I relate to others through music, how I desire to connect with others and with myself through music. And then it felt less intimidating and really kind of exciting and wonderful to think about music and how it connects to the lived experience.
I wonder also, this is a whole new podcast episode, but I also wonder if the pandemic, because we had to go into silos and our listening became very internal and individual, if that's going to have longer effects about music. And then, I mean, in some ways, you know, when you meet somebody that listened to, like you just discovered that you both love this one song, and this was one of your pandemic songs. I wonder if that's going to make those resonate all the more because you realize, oh, this person has had a deep dive with my artist and my album, and I wonder if that's going to carry.
The other thing, too, is I recall after the pandemic had, you know, when it was getting to its second year, end of its second year or so, and people were starting to go back out in public again, that the overwhelming demand for performance opportunities to witness music live again mm-hmm. was just huge.
It was.
And that may be the reason that concerts today cost about three times what they did yeah. 5 years. It's insane. But there was just this huge, built-up, unmet demand for communal experiences with music coming out of the pandemic, and it did that for us. Well, this has been a wonderful conversation, Professor Leah Falco. Leah, thanks so much for being with us here. I feel like I've learned a lot just by talking with you, and as whatever your thoughts were coming in, you had some really wonderful things to share with us.
Oh, that's so kind, and I feel the same way. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you, Leah, for being our guest today on Lifetimes of Listening. Thank you for listening today to Lifetimes of Listening. Now, if you haven't done so yet, please do follow or subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast app. We hope you'll also consider participating in our project, maybe by telling us your story.
We are extremely grateful for the more than 200 people who've recorded a story for the Arizona Musical Memory Archive. It's allowing us to better understand the ways people value music. If you haven't visited our website at musicalmemories.music.arizona.edu, please do so. There you'll find full-length interviews of the ones that we've posted here.
And you can also, if you like, submit a musical memory of your own via a sound file, if you like, an essay or a poem or even an illustration of some sort. Or if you like, suggest someone to us who you know, who you think might like to share their musical memory with us and this project. So take a look. It's musicalmemories.music.arizona.edu. I'm Dan Cruz.
And I'm Brian Moon. Thank you for listening.
The executive producer of Lifetimes of Listening, the Arizona Musical Memory Podcast, is Brian Moon. The program is produced and edited by Dan Cruz. The Lifetimes of Listening website was created by Cynthia Barlow, Principal Information Technology Manager with the University of Arizona School of Music. Music is from Zapsplat.com and from Pixabay.com. Special thanks to the University of Arizona School of Music and the UA College of Fine Arts for their continued support of the Lifetimes of Listening Musical Memory Archive and this podcast. For more information and to get involved in our research, visit musicalmemories.music.arizona.edu. This is Lifetimes of Listening, the Arizona Musical Memory Podcast.